Whistleblower Report, exposing lies, deceptions, and all that has assaulted our way of life. We must take back our freedom and live as God designed in a free America that honors our Constitution and our Creator. Our experts in medicine, ministry, law, military, environment, and education empower us to grow together as a nation. For such a time as this, the Whistleblower Report offers truth and solutions. Welcome to the Whistleblower Report. This is Dr. Lee for America with our international team here today and a special guest from London, Ben Rubin with the UK Column Independent News Channel and a digital transformation industry insider who has awakened to the dangers of digital control of our lives and is here to tell us from an insider perspective what it's all about and what they really do intend in the way of total digitization of society and control of every aspect of our life. As all of you know, Dr. Gilthorpe, Dr. Yeadon, and Andrea Klarich and I have been bringing news headlines from around the world about the coordinated agenda to control our lives and thwart all aspects of our freedom and individual national sovereignty. All of that under the guise of the next pandemic, with the fear-mongering about avian flu and all of the draconian measures that are starting to take place to slaughter chickens and cattle and dairy farmers' animals so that it is sabotaging our food supply under the guise of this pandemic of avian flu based on the false diagnostic test of a PCR, which isn't a diagnostic test and wasn't intended to be used in animals. So all of that has been one aspect of the control of our lives, and we're seeing the World Health Organization moving hellbent for passing the pandemic treaty that would dictatorially control public health response for every country in the world under the World Health Organization and Tedros, who has no medical training whatsoever and is basically a Marxist dictator puppet from Ethiopia, who is being run by Bill Gates and the Communist Chinese Party. So all the way around, the picture has been very threatening. But with what we plan to talk about today, there's a whole additional dimension of control of our lives that you haven't heard as much about. And Ben Rubin is uniquely qualified to bring that story to us with his insider perspective and his extensive background. Dr. Gilthorpe, you have had Ben Rubin speak in settings and programs that you've done. So tell us a little bit about what led you to bring Ben on as a guest for our Whistleblower Report today. And thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Lee. It's great to be on the show again. I haven't actually met Ben before. I just got to know him through UK Column News, which is a very good independent news program, which runs three times a week in the UK, but it's on the internet, so you can listen to it. I recommend it. I mean, it is UK focused on some days, but they do a lot of international news as well. And it's free to listen to, so I recommend people go there. This is how I first learned about Ben and his expertise. Really, I found very almost unique, because he has worked inside this. So the question for me is, you know, if we're being steered by into this digital control grid in the future, how is that being put into place? and who is running it. And I think Ben has unique insights into that because he worked for 18 or so years in that very industry, and so has seen it from the inside and at quite a high level. And then at some point, which I'll let Ben tell us about, he decided that wasn't the future for him, and then he became an independent journalist, investigative journalist, based in London, and then reporting on these things as they've been rolled out in front of us. So I won't do Ben a disservice by misquoting him. I'll let him introduce himself. Ben, was that a fair reflection?
Nothing to complain about.
Well, tell us more about your background.
That was
Ben.
A good job. Thank you very much. And of course, I can give you a bit. Hey,
yes,
sorry, Dr. Lee. What was that?
Tell us more about your background, in your words.
Yeah, absolutely. So, thanks for having me.
Okay. Thank you for having me here. Thank you for inviting me. It's fantastic to come along and have the conversation. I really appreciate it. It's really good to connect with some like-minded people on a Sunday and talk about some of the important issues of the day. And as Jonathan pointed out, I now work with an organisation called UK Column. You can find us at ukcolumn.org. We are a media outlet. We are investigative journalists. We do interviews. We do news broadcasts 3 times a week. It is quite UK focused. The name gives it away. But I think that the UK is very clearly at the centre of a lot of what is happening internationally at the moment as it relates to global governance. Yeah, let's just call it that. And a lot of the initiatives that we've seen playing out over the past few years, governments and corporations seeking to further extend their control and the amount of knowledge that they have about us and the amount of influence that they have over our lives. And as you pointed out, I'm a professional. I spent the best part of 20 years working in the consulting industry here in the UK. And the consulting industry the UK consulting industry is actually right at the forefront of global consulting, particularly as it relates to new technologies. So for the kind of latter half of my career, certainly from around 2012 till around 2021, 22, I was working on digital transformation. We were going through basically the entire system. So public sector, private sector, all of the different industries, a bit of charity work as well, but mainly private sector companies, big international corporations and government departments, and helping them to think about how to deploy new technologies, how to transform themselves, how to reap the benefits of digitization and these incredible advanced technologies that we have access to almost universally these days. And that began with websites, you know, so people sitting down at a computer using a website, and a lot of what I was doing was in an area called human computer interaction. So it's essentially, how do we make the internet, how do we make applications, how do we make the experience of using the technology more accessible? That's a really important part of extracting the value from the technology, is making it usable so people can actually sit down with it and they can use it without having to be shown what to do, that they can understand the navigational structure, how to move through the page, how the information fits together, what they're supposed to do, what are the different tasks that they're able to complete using the tech, that kind of thing. A lot of that started off with websites. But then very quickly, the work we were doing became dominated by mobile phones. We really kind of rode that wave of the iPhone and Google Android and that whole period of time, which was completely transformational for society, like how we engage with each other, how we engage with the world around us, how business is done, how we buy things, how we consume media, really absolutely every part of our lives. You will have noticed, I'm sure, has been impacted by these technologies that were kind of brought in as an inevitability, right? Like there was a sense that this stuff was just going to happen, you know. And at the time, I was focused on my clients, so we wanted to help them understand what the potential benefits would be of adopting these new technologies, this whole completely new ecosystem of extraordinarily powerful computers that we now all have in our pockets. I mean, everyone's walking around with a supercomputer in their pocket. People don't really think of it like that, but that is essentially what's happening. If you go back, you know, 20, 30, certainly 40 years and think about computational power and look at what we actually now have access to, you know, even increasingly children have access to levels of computational power and sophistication that were just completely unthinkable, really, up until recent decades. And how do we exist in that world, like as organizations? How do we connect with this new type of audience? And what does that mean for the consumer, for the user, for the customer, for the person that we're delivering value to, right? So actually, how are they accessing our services now versus how they're going to do it in the future? If you think about in banking, for example, you know, you go back to the 80s and the 90s, you wanted to go to the bank to do anything, right? To deposit funds, to apply for a loan, to talk to them about getting a credit card, like whatever it might be. You're probably going to walk into a branch. A lot of what we were doing, and this is still the case in the US, right? People were using paper checks, right? That's completely disappeared now, and certainly in Western Europe, like people haven't used checks for like well over 10 years. You were going into a physical location, or at a push, you would be phoning up a contact center and you'd be speaking to someone who was sitting in an office somewhere. But it was all done human to human, right? Like even if it was being mediated through technology in some way, like by the phone network, it was all being delivered human to human. And the technology that's come in has essentially replaced that. Right. So we've gone from a paradigm which was about human to human interaction in a physical location to everything being mediated through the handset. So in the UK, my industry statistics are probably going to be slightly out of date now. But there was a period of time around 2018, 2019, where I was still doing a lot in financial services, for example. And there was this big moment where the number of mobile phone users of the banks began there were more mobile phone users of banking services than there were of any other channels. So there was a big flip from the traditional model and how people accessed services to this new digital model that's delivered through applications, delivered through the devices. It wasn't just in banking. It was absolutely everywhere. We've all experienced it. And our job was to help rethink how companies existed in that new reality. From the experience of the customer, the end user, but then also to completely re-engineer and redesign their internal capabilities and their operating model and everything going on behind the scenes in order to deliver that as well. And that took up my time and my attention for the best part of 10 years. It was really interesting work. We got to work with some fascinating companies. This digital transformation was impacting absolutely everybody. So at one point we were working in, I don't know, six, seven, eight major industries at one time. So we were looking across all of the different parts of the economic system, all of the different government departments, all of the people in senior leadership positions were interested in the work that we were doing. It was very topical. It was very current. We were right at the center of it in London. Around 2015, the company that I was part of, where I was a director, was acquired by one of the big global management consulting firms. And that just turbocharged everything that we were doing, because we went from being a small boutique UK business to being plugged into the UK and European and global operations of a huge international organization working with, I don't know, 70, 80% of the biggest companies in the world. This was all great, actually. You know, there's a period of time where I was really enjoying myself. The work was really engaging and really interesting. But then around 2018, 2019, and then certainly into 2020 and 21, as the pandemic, the supposed pandemic hit, and we began to see the reality of what government and the corporations were up to and what they were about, and the whole tone of that and the things that they were trying to force through, and the kind of reality of that situation came to the forefront. I began to realize that the end point of the technology that we'd been deploying was not good, actually. I'm not a complete anti-tech person, right? I think that there's been a lot of benefit to the technologies, not least the fact that we can all sit here today having this conversation. There have been incredible networks. The UK Column, the organization that I work for, could not exist without the internet. We wouldn't be able to broadcast. Like, none of that stuff would there, wouldn't exist. There have been some real benefits to these technologies, but the people specifying the global roadmap for how they're being deployed cannot be trusted. And actually, all of this power, all of this capability is being pushed forward by the wrong hands. Ultimately, like, this stuff sits in the wrong hands. The people defining how it's going to be used across society are not the right people.
Ben, in addition to exactly what you've just said, we are looking at diabolical agendas rather than beneficial agendas. Maybe you can comment on that as well.
Well, yes, certainly. I mean, diabolical agenda would certainly be the way to describe it. I mean, if you actually look into the backgrounds and the philosophies of, I mean, really the whole of Silicon Valley, actually. I mean, if we want to get right down into the guts of it, yeah, like Silicon Valley itself and the big tech industry and this mindset of global digital platform businesses that put all of the power, all of the wealth creation potential, all of the knowledge, all of the capability into an increasingly small number of hands. Like, that whole paradigm is morally bankrupt, right? And that whole paradigm is dominating every single part of the system right now. So if you think about industries, we have things, you know, I've talked a bit about banking, but you've got the energy sector, you've got the health system, you've got agriculture, you've got retail, you've got music, you've got media, you've got all the different kind of structural components of what goes into building up civilization, like all the things that surround us. But then cutting through that horizontally, you have the big tech firms who basically underpin everything, right? So, you know, people, I think, probably underestimate quite how structurally important organizations like Google, Amazon, Meta, aka Facebook, and Microsoft and Apple and increasingly Nvidia are to the way that our civilization operates. Yeah, they are everywhere. Yeah, so if you think about the cloud computing market, for example, essentially you've got an oligopoly. You've got Microsoft, Amazon, and Google. They are the three dominant players in cloud computing, and they work with absolutely everybody, yeah, whether it's the US Department of Defense or the World Economic Forum itself or any of the big global corporations, those businesses are underpinning everything that happens inside industry and in governance and elsewhere and further afield, and also with consumers as well, right?
So, yes, and they have access to all of the data on every detail in all of those sectors and all of those businesses and governments. It's really quite chilling.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And you know, like the it is reasonable to conclude, I think, or to, it's reasonable to believe that the whole technology sector, as it's currently configured, has essentially been set up as a data gathering and spying operation. Essentially, I mean, that's basically what it is. It's what they've built. It's how it's being used. And actually, if you look into the backgrounds of, you know, many of these tech companies, whether it's Oracle or Google or Palantir, which is a much more contemporary one, you know, Oracle's been around since the late 70s. Google's been around since the 90s. Palantir's been around actually since the early 2000s, but it's becoming much more prominent today because its AI tech is being used absolutely everywhere. They are very clearly and openly connected into the intelligence agencies, whether it's the CIA or Mossad or MI5, MI6, whatever it might be. Yeah. So this network of interconnected private market businesses, intelligence agencies, and state actors is absolutely enmeshed into everything that we rely on increasingly on a daily basis in order for society just simply to run. Jonathan, did you have a question?
Yeah, I did, Ben, because, I mean, the way I've been thinking about this more recently, and it was actually after listening to you where you kind of liken this to the rise of Nazism, where you have this fusion of government with with industry, with the corporate sector working against the people. But I was thinking about this in terms of, I mean, it is an industrial revolution. You're right. Things are changing. The way that we live our lives have changed dramatically in the last 10, 20 years. But if you compare it to maybe previous industrial revolutions, it wasn't the military that was controlling the development of the technology. Whereas I see this is all probably evolution that's come out of military tech that's filtered down into the corporate sector. For example, you know, Facebook starting up as LifeLog as a CIA project and then moving into the public sector. And I guess Amazon's done the same. It's been, you know, it made its money from acting as server space for the US military. So do you see that? I mean, I see that as part of this toxic side to all this, is that it's being run by the military against the public, or at least that's where it originated. It's not for the benefit of humankind.
Yeah, it is. It's a control grid, essentially. The internet itself spun out of DARPA, which is a US DOD innovation lab, right? So, you know, straight off the bat, the internet itself is a US military project. I was talking about this on UK Column a couple of weeks ago. If you look at the origins of the mobile telecommunications network, like where did Vodafone come from, right? So Vodafone is the big global telecommunications business that certainly through the late 90s, early 2000s was the de facto international player for mobile telecommunications. That came out of the British Army in the late 70s and the early 90s, right? So these technologies, like many advanced technologies, come from deep research being carried out by governments, by military organizations, and as time goes on, the civilian applications become more clear. But then the question is, is there an ulterior motive behind this being deployed for civilians as opposed to being kept classified or whatever else it is that they do with these technologies when they don't want people to find out about them, right? So and you're right, that I've talked a lot about what is basically, it's the dictionary definition of fascism, yeah? So part of Mussolini's definition of fascism, and Mussolini invented fascism, So he's a good person to go to for a definition. He actually said that it would be better described in some ways as corporatism, because it's essentially a fusion of the corporations, the private markets, and the state, and they start to work together ever more closely and promote each other's interests. And that's what we're looking at here. And the phrase that Mike Yeadon picked up on in one of the first interviews that I gave just over a year ago, when I kind of broke cover and decided that I wasn't going to be a corporate person anymore. I was going to be a whistleblower. I was going to talk about a lot of the injustices and the dangers that I can see in the system. One of the phrases that I used was that they've built the capability for a global concentration camp. And that is true. That's what has been created, not least through the development of the COVID passport system, which was essentially, I mean, you could actually understand COVID itself, whatever that was, as the pretext for rolling out a digital identity system everywhere. And in fact, if you just go and listen to things that were being said by Tony Blair or Yuval Noah Harari or Klaus Schwab himself or any number of mainstream political figures, media commentators, whatever it might be from 2020 and 2021, they were absolutely dead set desperate on rolling out a digital identity system because that will allow them to control you, me, all of us, in whatever way they want. Because if you are dependent, and actually a lot of what Blair is doing at the moment is talking about digital transformation of government, right? They want to completely change service delivery in government to make it mobile phone first. So essentially you're accessing everything from the government through a phone. They want to completely change the way that we access services from the state. But then they also want the state to be doing ever larger amounts of things in society. Actually, ultimately, what they want is for us to be all completely dependent on the state. Because if you're completely dependent on the state, and in order to get the things that you need from the state, even down to things like food, right? You push this out into its logical conclusion. If you're dependent on the state for absolutely everything, healthcare, education, food, why not? Right? So, what that means is that if you are dependent on the state, and in order to access state services, you have to go through this digital control system. If you're non-compliant for whatever reason that might be, yeah, like it could be that you said the wrong thing online and they're tracking that, or you met with a political dissident and they don't want you doing that, or you haven't been in for your 8th, 9th, 10th round of COVID booster and they think that you should do that, then they can start to withhold services from you. They can start to interfere with your ability to do absolutely anything in the system that they control centrally. And that is extraordinarily dangerous.
Well, all the way around, it totally usurps the idea of being a free, unique, thinking individual able to direct our lives. And we'll talk more about that after the break. But Ben, what you have brought up is extraordinarily helpful for our listeners who don't have the insider perspective that you do to really understand the truly diabolical aspect of their real goal. And that ultimately will lead to people dying if they cannot get the food and the access to their own resources that they have been accustomed to controlling themselves. It's a very frightening prospect. So let's talk more about it after the break. This is Dr. Lee for America with the Whistleblower Report from Truth for Health Foundation. Check out our website at www.truthforhealth.org. And especially all of our new nutraceuticals and vitamins and minerals and supplements that will help you improve your health and resilience in the face of all of these threats to our health. We'll be right back after the break.
We live in a world full of disinformation, lies, and deceit. often from those institutions and individuals that we used to rely on and trust. In the chaos that surrounds us on a daily basis, it's difficult to find a place for truthful information and helpful guidance. Where can we turn for honest answers, critical solutions, and information that empowers us to be the person that God intended? The Truth for Health Foundation. The Truth for Health Foundation works every day to fight for your basic human rights. We have a track record of providing life-saving emergency actions that can improve your health and empower you with the tools to be safe, happy, and free to live your life. With over 100,000 supporters around the world, we are a critical voice of truth in today's world. We invite you to join our community of financial supporters so that we can continue to be your trusted partner for health, for life, for resilience. Join us today by giving now.
This message is from the Truth for Health Foundation. Hi, I'm Dr. Sam Sigloff, a family medicine physician and a major in the U.S. Army. The following are only my opinions. Service members are being coerced to participate in medical experimentation, with over 7,500 service members being discharged for refusing to participate, many of them losing their retirement and medical benefits. There are allegations that the DoD is committing medical fraud, violating the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and violating constitutional rights of service members. Strong men and women stand ready to defend so that you can sleep peacefully through the night. Now we must stand watch over the military so they can sleep peacefully through the night. Please get involved to help protect the military. This message brought to you by the Truth for Health Foundation. For more information, please visit truthforhealth.org. That's truthforhealth.org. That's truthforhealth.org.
Welcome back to the second half of the Whistleblower Report. This is Dr. Lee for America with our special guest, Ben Rubin, investigative journalist with the UK Column. And their website is ukcolumn.org. And he has spent 20 years as an insider consulting on new technologies for international corporations and governments on transforming us into a fully digitized society, until he became alarmed at the underlying agenda that led to loss of our humanness and loss of our control over our individual lives. And he left the digital world to become a truth teller, an investigative reporter, to alert all of us to what's really going on under the guise of big tech benefits. So Ben, thank you for explaining the enormity of the control being planned. What thoughts do you have about what the average person can begin to do to push back against such massive control? As you said, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft are in everything we do. How do we begin to push back against that level of control?
That's a very good question, and it's not a trivial thing to consider, right? Because as you say, they and as I outlined in the first half of the show, they underpin at huge swathes of our civilization, like how society runs. Like they are absolutely everywhere. They're ubiquitous. The most immediate things that we can do, there has to be a real period of deep reflection as a society, as communities, as individuals, as to what our relationship with technology is. Yeah, like because as I said earlier, I'm not anti-tech, but the way that we're using it right now is not good. It's not taking us in the right direction. It's not good for us as individuals. It's destroying the social fabric. It's created a digital surveillance grid for the military industrial complex. You know, there's none of these things that are small things that can be easily dismissed, right? And we've got to think about what is the appropriate use of these technologies in our societies. I think that's particularly true for children. There's been a big organic kind of uprising in this country over the past few months, even, and I know people personally who are involved in this, against mobile phones in childhood. Right, so there's a big push towards getting them out of schools, getting them out of the hands of children. I mean, frankly, we don't really know, although I have an inkling that a lot of the tech companies, particularly the social media companies, have got a lot of internal information from their own research that demonstrates that there are extraordinary damages being done to young people in particular by social platforms and by connected devices and all these technologies that essentially they're hiding from us. There's a big discussion going on about this. I think that parents need to take matters into their own hands. A lot of people are talking about lobbying the government to get them to intervene, to regulate. I don't think that they're ever going to do anything. They'll pay lip service to it, but ultimately they are in bed with big tech. Like they share the same goals, they have the same agenda. So this has to be something that comes from the grassroots. It comes from the people itself. So I think that's absolutely got to happen. And more broadly, as consumers, as participants in the economic system, people who have agency, that we can make choices about where we buy things from, where we spend our money, where we spend our time and our attention. We've got to consciously disengage from this ecosystem. And I know it's extraordinarily convenient to be able to buy things on Amazon and have them turn up the next day to your door. And if something's wrong with it, you can send it straight back and they'll give you a refund straight away. And the service levels that you get are incredible. But ultimately, the price that you're paying for that convenience is that you're supporting an organization that is in many ways at war with you, right? Like the negative impacts of these organizations on social fabric, on the economy more broadly, are difficult to overstate. So spending your money with them is not a good idea, right? Because you're just perpetuating the problem. And I'll say that sitting here, I buy stuff on Amazon, and I've got an Apple laptop, although it's quite old now, and I won't buy a new one, and I won't buy a new iPhone. But there's a period of us having to go through as individuals and clean up, actually really consciously think about how we get out of this this ecosystem and onto something that's much more humane, ultimately. That's much more traditional and also much more local as well, because one of the things that the internet has done and that these big international corporations have done is that they've centralized everything towards themselves, and that's been to the detriment of local economies, local communities, local cultures. So we've got to break things back down to basics and get connected to our local area, our local people, the local agriculture, in a way that's been really atrophied and diluted by these technologies and the big corporations that produce them.
Well, and there's a huge psychological cost to that, as well as a huge impact adversely on the whole social fabric, social relationships, and connections and the social fabric, as you mentioned earlier. Dr. Gilthorpe, you had a comment.
Yes, Dr. Lee, I'd just like to take Ben back a little, trying to understand this whole transformation that happened after World War II or after the ashes of World War II. I mean, IBM were very tightly involved with cataloging Jewish prisoners in Nazi Germany in World War II before they were exterminated. And then, you see the seeds of IBM now Microsoft in this transformation that's happening now. And, you know, most of the Nazis were spirited away into the US, UK or Russia at the end of World War II. I think at the Nuremberg trials, which many of us quote about new Nurembergs need to happen, but there was only 14 people actually hung at Nuremberg. So that was really a lipstick on a pig, I think. So, I mean, do you see how this embryo of what was, you know, basically salvaged from the ashes of World War II and then transported into Western civilization, into the US and the UK particularly, has been used to generate this system, you know, this return of Nazism, really, that you're talking about, you know, according to Mussolini's definition? I mean, how does that come about? What's the mechanism there that's allowed this to happen? Is this just how evil keeps coming back time and time again every 70 or so years, or is there a plan behind this?
Oh, this, I mean, there's certainly a plan behind it, a very, very tightly coordinated, multi-decade, maybe even multi-century plan for global governance, global domination by the supposed elites, right? I mean, these people describe themselves as elites. They're not elite at all. They're just parasites, and they enjoy accruing wealth and power for themselves at the expense of others. And the technology really gives them power. Yeah, that's the thing that the tech does. It allows them unparalleled access to information. And knowledge about citizens that they just would not have had access to in any other way. And you're right, there was very little actual justice meted out after the Second World War. The Nuremberg trials did what they did, but as you say, there are a lot of people from the Nazi regime who went off into senior positions in NATO or NASA or CIA or whatever else it might be, and they took the technology and they took the ideology and the worldview with them, and it's absolutely at the core of what we're looking at today. The agendas are ultimately being played out by the same people, even, you know, like if you look at some of the elite families that sit behind a lot of the goings on that we're looking at, so the Rockefellers, for example, or you know, the British royal family, even, who are actually a German family, the Saxe-Gotha-Coburgs. They're not the House of Windsor; they are actually a German elite family. They've been engaged in this for centuries now. And you only need to go and look at, I mean, crikey, people talk about conspiracy theories and as some kind of pejorative term. Well, if you go to the World Economic Forum website and you look at their, there's a section they have on, I think it's called Strategic Intelligence. They've actually mapped out an enormous global ecosystem of different interconnected component parts that can only actually be described as a conspiracy. I mean, there's no other way to understand that, right? That's what it is. And they're doing it in plain sight. They're issuing press releases. They've got all these big public statements. They get together every year in January, you know, at Davos. And that's just Davos we're talking about. There are an absolute plethora of other organizations like the World Economic Forum that are all engaged in this planning process and the funding and the execution of this plan towards global totalitarianism. They're reaching the advanced stages of it now, right? Because the technology has reached a point where it's actually capable, or they believe it's capable of doing the things that they want it to do internationally. The COVID scenario, you know, that global, heavily coordinated lockdown, the rush through of the supposed vaccination program, the way that the media was controlled, the way that the scientific establishment lined up behind the agenda. Like, all of that was centrally controlled. There was absolutely no other way for it to happen.
Yeah, I guess you're right, Ben. I mean, it's essentially the same evil that crops up. It's this need to control every aspect of humanity, transhumanism, eugenics, whatever you want, you know, not to allow God's creation to go, well, it will go along the lines that it was designed. It will always come back to some kind of normal. But yeah, it's really the technology that has grown to a degree that enables this level of control to be imposed. And of course, the owners of that technology, the people that developed it and saw the potential for control, are the ones that are driving it. I mean, I don't see it's the eternal battle in some sense, but we are in a pretty desperate situation, I think, because so few people are aware of what's being done to them and what the future holds.
True, Dr. Gilthorpe, the whole and what Ben was saying about the COVID scenario, I have often referred to that as a dry run for seeing how quickly people would submit to this total control. And actually, it was a very successful dry run, because in using the threat of and the fear mongering about your life and whether or not you get this dreaded disease and die, people just capitulated rapidly. I was absolutely shocked to see how the spirit of America, as Americans typically have more of a fighting spirit, how people just rolled over and capitulated almost immediately. It was really shocking to see. So I think it was clearly a dry run, and they wanted to see how much control they could put in place all at once in an orchestrated way by controlling the media and public health response and using fear of illness, severe illness, as the control weapon. Fear was the device.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, fear is their primary organizing tactics. It's how they get people to do what they want to do. Which was what the Nazis perfected as well, right? You know, plus most all other authoritarian regimes. You know, people talk a lot about the Nazis, but this is the tactics get used everywhere. You know, the Chinese being a great example in you know, sort of contemporary geopolitics. But you know, as we've seen, Western politicians are just as happy to do the same thing themselves. And actually, we're basically living under a totalitarian system, and it would appear that that's been going on for quite some time, even though most people wouldn't understand it in those terms. I think just to go back to one of the things you were talking about, Jonathan, in terms of control, and it's control, but it's also degradation of humanity as well. So what the reason that I mean, one of the reasons that I stood up last year and started talking about what was going on, was that I'd been, and the thing that really shook me, actually, right? So, you know, the natural endpoint of the digitization work that I'd been doing beginning to be a little bit concerning to me was one thing. But then in 2021, I was doing some contract work with a small consulting firm in London that was advising a UK government program called Genomics England. And that is a data platform for housing your DNA sequence, right? And they've already got 5 million people, UK citizens, they've got their genetic sequence stored on this data platform. And they're currently scaling it up to be a full population data set. So they want to have everyone in the UK stored on this platform, and essentially what that allows them to do is to use artificial intelligence, use these algorithms to mine us at a genetic level for opportunities to make money and to interfere with our genetic codes, right? So the technology is being used to rewrite our genetic sequences. Yeah, and then the way I think about your genetic sequence is it's like your soul. It's your individual resonant frequency. It's completely unique to you as an individual, and they want to take that and they want to rewrite it, re-engineer it, interfere with it chemically as part of this new global marketplace that they're creating. And that's profoundly evil, right? And I think, you know, particularly in the UK, like we're a godless society in the UK. That's changing, thankfully, as a reaction to a lot of the stuff that we've seen happen over the past few years. But these technologies are being used to already now, right now, to do some things which are completely ethically inexcusable and nonsensical, right? If you actually understand what the health system is doing in the UK, like how it behaves on a daily basis, the actual problems that we face as a nation, and what would be reasonable and impactful ways of dealing with those things, you know, like improving our food supply, that would be where you would start. If you wanted to have a positive impact on the health of the nation, you would start to improve what we eat. You wouldn't be spending billions of pounds a year on building a DNA database so that you can give the pharmaceutical industry privileged access to people's genetic data so that they can create novel pharmaceuticals to transform our genetic sequence. It's complete lunacy. Right. And actually behind that is, you know, I see it as satanic. Ultimately, it's what you're dealing with. It's the old enemy, the oldest enemy that there is. Right. And that is how I understand the system, ultimately, that can specify and build that type of capability. Like what's driving that? And it's an extraordinarily dark and destructive worldview. And actually, when you look into the likes of Schwab and Bill Gates and, you know, what are their actual beliefs, then that's where you end up. It's the natural conclusion that you have to make. And a lot of people find that really difficult to deal with, to engage with, particularly, you know, as I was saying, in the UK here, because our capacity for religious belief and the institution that is the Church of England in particular has been so aggressively downgraded and undermined from the inside by people who've been put into the institutions deliberately to destabilize it and destroy them. The vast majority of the population don't even have the capacity to engage with that as a concept, right? They don't know what satanic means, so they can't see it around them in the world when it's there. And that's a huge part of the challenge that we're facing. And interestingly, it's going to be a real wake up call, I think, to a lot of people over the next year or two as we begin to see, I think, what we're already starting to see, but we're going to see a real renaissance in Christian belief, I think, in this country. It's already happening. As someone who up until about 3 years ago was a dogged atheist, it's a remarkable thing to just be sitting here and saying that, but I fervently believe that to be the case.
Well, you know, Ben, I think you're absolutely correct, not only in your description of what they're doing with AI and big tech and rewriting and re-engineering human beings' individual genetic code, but it is satanic. It is the oldest enemy, and it's all biblical. And I'm seeing evidence of that reawakening spiritually in the U.S. as well, as more people are realizing that, just as you've described the Church of England turning away from true its biblical roots in Christianity, the mainstream Protestant churches in the United States and the Catholic Church have clearly turned away from biblical Judeo-Christian teachings, both Old and New Testament. And it's really very heartwarming to see the degree to which people are leaving those settings and turning to groups and organizations and churches that are non-denominational and more biblically based. I think people are hungry for that soul connection that our modern societies have become in soulless and the spiritual void that you talked about, the godless society. I think you're making a extremely important point. And actually, I would be interested in having you come back, if you're willing, on another program and talk in more depth about this genomics company in England and what they're doing and what are the broader ramifications of that. You brought out some really important points, but I think it might be helpful to perhaps, if you're willing, go into more depth on that in a future show.
I'd be delighted to, yeah.
Because I don't think people realize, you know, all of these Ancestry.com and 23andMe, those are also just genetic data gathering sources for this diabolical, malevolent agenda as well. So I think people have been seriously misled. Andrea, before we wrap up today, we're kind of coming to the end of the show. Do you have any comments from having lived under communism and that totalitarian regime?
I completely agree with Ben that this is something that we are fighting against the oldest enemy. And I see him exactly as you mentioned, Dr. Lee, communism. Well, they're just rebranded and call it now Great Reset. And it's the same thing. Before they had some other marketing and they called him communism, they didn't know that that will end that bad. And when they saw it, now they need to renew it and make, you know, rebranding, name it by the new symbols. And for that, now they have all infrastructure. And what Ben said, told us, this is infrastructure that we accepted, unfortunately. And we think that we can use it and it's good for us, of course, it can be. But people who implement it, who offer us, they have some other plans. That's why it's very important to spread this message, to show really to all these people that they are not kidding, they're really planning to take over and control everything. And we are in the war between good and evil. There is no left and right anymore. There is only good and evil. And every person knows from his birth date what is good and what is bad. Only we need to decide if we want to act like this, or we will listen propaganda or listen indoctrination, what we hear all around us. And if you want to see now the last example of what I'm talking here, this new propaganda, you can see it in Eurovision, what was finished last evening. And you should see who won it, how he won it. And you can see that is a political propaganda behind it, political woke propaganda who want to implement new rules, new normal. This is really proof. And whoever understands what is happening can see it.
Well, that's very well said. And I want to thank all of you for joining us today. And Ben, thank you very much for giving of your time and expertise to help our listeners better understand what's really going on. And we look forward to having you back. I would like to pursue more about this genomics company and how they're doing what they're doing and what are some of the ways that it's being used. Dr. Gilthorpe, thanks so much for introducing us to Ben Rubin. And to all of our listeners, please share our programs with your networks. People need to understand the threats coming at us. And it is only with all of us turning back to God, as well as sharing and encouraging others to do the same. And as Ben Rubin said eloquently, disengage from the ecosystem. You can start thinking about ways in your life to begin to do just that. We'll be back again with another whistleblower report. Check out our website at www.truthforhealth.org. Stand against evil, speak out, be part of the solution, and join our crusade. We are silent no more.